Vancouver to Montreal was like 40 minutes. No, it was taking 4 hours, and it just wasn't a viable route, so they were stopping it at Albany. I had been checking the schedule daily. They had just stopped it, you know, the day before. So that was a kind of deflating moment. And I sat there, the caretaker at the train station let me in to get some water, use the bathroom. And I wasn't sure what I was going to do. And he came up with a business card and said, there's a guy who's got like a ride share service. And I called, he didn't answer. And I had never used Uber at that point in my life. But I had downloaded the app just in case. So I caught an Uber like 15 miles south to a ferry across the lake. The Vermont side is more sheltered. I was able to make my way down to that fancy resort in time. So there were moments where I didn't know what to do, and it worked out every time. Lee, please.
So more on the physical stuff. You said, you know, the physical stuff, you just do it. Well, most of us don't. Did you train, or did you hurt, or did you, like...
Yeah, not,
are you just
not really either. Like,
okay.
Yeah, I mean, so I think paddleboarding is easier than it looks. I kind of, Jesus illusion aside, I kind of refer it to like walking on water. You know, it's slow and sustainable. And if you're walking, you can walk for 10 hours and get 40 or 50 kilometers. If you're paddling for 10 hours, you can get 40 or 50 kilometers. I didn't do a formal training program. I was more active than usual in the months leading up to the trip.
Yeah.
I stretched a lot at the end of each day. The hardest part was the hands, just from gripping the paddle. It took like months afterwards for my fingers to kind of unlock. But, you know, and this is... not to get into the canoe kayak debate, but I would have a hard time sitting and doing that for 10 or 12 hours. But when you're standing, you're kind of moving around, you're making micro adjustments, you're using different muscles. You know, it's not wise to never paddleboard and hop on a board and go for 12 hours your first time. But if you put in the time, you put in the distance, if your feet will support you, I was okay doing that. And it's the bigger muscles doing the work. It's the core, right? Your shoulders and arms are just kind of holding the paddle. So it's kind of a sustainable... You're not going to go fast, but you just kind of do it. And it's not like... I think, you know, more people could do, like, overnight or longer sup trips if they knew how easy it was, as long as you have the knowledge and the capacity and the gear to do so.
Thanks.
Yeah. Please.
Well, on the very practical like that, what was the total weight of all your gear? You're talking about going to the train station and stuff. How much weight are you carrying? Can you carry it all at one time? Or
yeah, so the dry bags, I had about 60 pounds of gear with me. The paddle board is like 25, and then I have like a couple of three-piece paddles and a PFD. So I did a few... Like I practice at home. I walk to the bus stop with like bags with like cans of stuff, just approximate gear. Walk to the bus, took the bus to the Rideau River, paddled the length of the Rideau, and then portaged like a mile to the Ottawa, and then like 20 kilometers, and then a couple buses and a train home before leaving, just to see if I could do this by myself. Having the whole kit to get like when you're off the water was challenging, but it was doable. So the paddleboard goes on your back, the two big dry bags, you know, in your hand, the other one over your shoulder, and you just kind of go really slowly and take a lot of breaks. My relative, when I was staying with him in Manhattan, you know, dropped me off outside the bus station. You can't stop and like help people out of a car in New York. He just threw me out of the car. So I had to get from the street to my bay to get to the Greyhound, and I was able to, you know, it took a while, but I got there, right?
So I get 90 pounds from what you...
Yeah, 90, 100 pounds, something like that. And you go slowly, you smell, you sweat, you smell. But, you know, you can do... I got to the point, though, when I would get the locks and they would lock me through, it was easy. If I got there before or after operating hours, I had to portage. And I would do it in two trips. Like, you know what? I could do it in one. And the inflatable boards are so durable that I just dragged it half the time. Like, you know what? I could carry it, but it's heavy. I'm just dragging this thing. And, yes, please.
Thanks for the presentation. I really enjoyed it, and I was struck by the amount of detail you told. So I have two questions about writing. The first one's kind of a practical thing, and that is, did you spend time writing at the end of every day, and if so, how'd you do that? And the second thing relates to a couple things you've said throughout, and that is the kindness of strangers. Was that a revelation, or did you go in knowing that, and if so, what did you learn after the trip about that you weren't expecting?
Both very good questions. Thank you. So I've been a journalist for like 35 years. I've used the exact same style of notepad for 35 years, and I just scribble notes all the time. I can barely read them. They're real scribbles. But I recognize the shapes of words. They kind of cue a memory in the context, so they allow me to recreate interactions. I also took a lot of photos. I did video interviews with people. I had an audio recorder to do audio interviews. So I don't write as I go. I had no computer with me, and I don't like writing longhand because I really fiddle with the words as they're coming onto the screen. But I had good notes, and as Alex asked earlier, I did a lot of interviews after the fact as well. So people like Val and Marianne, who I met paddling in, we talked on the phone afterwards, where I got, you know, more of their story than I got while standing there on my board. The kind of stranger, so I think I kind of had blinders on, because I went into this trip thinking about blue space and health, blue space and sustainability, not about blue space and community. Even though there is research that speaks to blue space as kind of a social lubricant and encouraging social interaction. So it did surprise me. I didn't know just how strong those interactions would be. And that's why it became, you know, the main theme of the book was about community, was about people. And I've tried to carry that with me. So, I mean, I've always, as a writer, as a journalist, tried to talk to people, been open to, you know, asking questions and interacting with people anywhere. But I think I've been doing that even more since I've been on this trip. And it had a pretty significant impact on me. I mean, you get back to daily life and taking the garbage out or whatever, paying taxes, and some of the magic does erode over time. But you try to carry it. I remember after I mentioned Dr. Stanley Vallon. I did this like 2.5 week winter walk with him in Quebec for the walking book, and it was a group of 60 people. I was the only non-Indigenous, non-Francophone in the trip. It was camping in tents. It was really changed my life. And then I got home, and both of my daughters had stomach flu like within 2 days, and I'm dealing with reality, right? So it's hard to keep that sometimes, but it's there. It just goes a bit deeper sometimes.
Can you maybe describe to us the difference in mental state of walking on these long journeys versus being on the water? Did you feel there was a significant difference in your sort of depressed, happy, how you handled adversity? Is there a difference?
Yeah. You can carry more gear when you're paddling than you can walking. So, I don't think I ever want to do an overnight hike again and have that on my back.
Yeah.
It's still hard for me to explain it, but the magic of water, the magic of blue space, it always feels good. Like, walking can be magnificent in a beautiful natural area, in a city, around people. Walking can be really transformative and powerful, but it's also more pedestrian and more kind of commonplace, whereas even paddling in the most kind of banal environment has a bit of that magic, has a bit of that balance on that fluid, right? So I think it's more restorative than walking. Mm-hmm. Different strokes for different folks, you know. Mm-hmm. Some people would pick cycling or paragliding, whatever, right, is their jam. But one of the differences was that when I was writing about walking, everybody says that the best cure for writer's block is to go for a walk. I couldn't do that, because then I would just be in more agony because I'd be thinking about walking. In this case, writing about paddling, I kind of stayed off my board when I was writing about it, because I was just thinking about it all the time, and I didn't really want to go back there. I'm kind of rediscovering it now. So now that the book is out, the writing part is done, and the fun of this is here, I'm kind of back on my board more often. But I don't know. Will I go back to walking? Will I discover different types of paddling or water pursuits? I'm not sure.
I think you touch on this in the book, but maybe this sort of instinctive or whatever connection with the water that humans have has something to do with the fact that we emerged from this, from the primeval oceans, as these little slimy creatures, and even now we're still like, what is it, 70-80% water? So maybe it's like we're going home in some really deeply primeval way, you know, like a reptilian brain, you know?
It's essential for all life, right? Like, we don't forget that, but we kind of do forget that. There's an amazing book out now called The Theory of Water by Leanne Betasamasake Simpson, an Anishinaabe scholar and writer. And water is life. Water is everything. There's a new book out by Robin McFarlane, a British nature writer. Is a river alive? Part of which is set on a river in northern Quebec. And he doesn't answer the question, he says, but yeah, I mean, river is alive, right? And that's tied into the personhood movement and the rights of nature movement. You know, if a corporation can have legal status, then why not a river, right? So, yeah, it's everything, right? I mean, we need land, we need air, but without this liquid flowing through us. And Leanne Betasama-Sackett-Simpson, in Theory of Water, you know, the condensation, the moisture in the air that comes into me, that goes out of me, goes into you and vice versa. Like, we're all connected through this fluid, not to get too far down that line, but she's
it's
right.
It's all the same water, too.
Like, it's all, yeah.
We're breathing the same air and water that dinosaurs did.
Yeah. Yeah, that water on the Richelieu River is here now, right? Part of it. Thank you all. Oh, sorry, please.
Another kind of practical question.
Of course.
Because, yeah, this is great. Thank you so much. I'm a canoe lover, but then I discovered paddleboarding, and now it's, another love.
Do you prefer paddleboarding, or what's your...
Both. No, for different reasons, different things, right?
Of course.
But yeah, I'm really... Part of what I wanted to know about is that... you said it was a 14... Like, so the practicalities of, like, if you're doing something long distance like this or camping, like, do you need to have a bigger board? Can you do... Like, I have a, you know, like, I have a red paddle, you know, 10.5, whatever.
Right.
Ride, so...
Yes.
So kind of, like, something I'd love to try. Like, I...
Yeah. So the first trip I did, the Smith Falls to Ottawa trip, was on a 10.5-foot board from Level 6, which is an Ottawa company. They sell at Mech.
Yeah.
The length gives you speed.
Right.
And the bigger board, the more gear capacity, right? But depending on what you're like, so I talked to a really experienced adventurer, paddleboarder friend of BC, and Bruce Kirkby is his name, a fantastic writer. And Bruce said, this is the specific board you need. I know Mike, the owner of Badfish, contact him, and Mike from Badfish gave me the board, so it was perfect. I also have a 12.5-foot inflatable board, which is great for camping and trips too. So depending on how much gear you need to carry, a 10-foot board would be fine.
Yeah.
12.5 would be more. The width, you know, gives you volume and gear capacity. It also slows you down a little bit.
Yeah.
If you want to go quickly, then a narrower board. But the width also gives you stability. So depending on if it's calm, flat water in Ontario, great. If you're on the Atlantic Ocean and there's going to be waves and tides and whatnot, then you might want more width. But yeah, it depends where you are. And I mean, the danger is that, you know, that adage amongst diehard cyclists, what's the proper number of bikes to have? N plus one, right? And then the number you have. So I've got 6.
And there's
two more that I need. My wife doesn't agree with me, but you know, you get really kind of specific. And I didn't buy all them. I have to say, some were kind of gifted to me by various companies. But yeah, depends on what your usage is. But you can, you know, if you're doing like a one night trip, a short distance, try it with your short board. And if it's great, great. If not, then you know, the
start saving.
Sky's the limit, right? Yeah.
Chris will buy you one.
After you guys. Thank you.
Happy to answer questions, happy to hang out, sign books, etc. But yeah, thank you again, Nicola, and everybody
thank
here.
Thank you all.
Thank you all. Great introduction.
Oh, that was
And it you just heard from a June 18th book launch event at Novel Idea Bookstore. And as emceed by Alec Ross, you heard Dan Rubenstein with a, as you could hear, a video projection as well, talk about and launch his new book called Waterborne, a 1,200-mile paddleboarding pilgrimage. And right now, before we move into the second segment of the show today, my heartfelt thanks to all of you for having tuned in to the first hour and a bit, and my thanks as well to Dan for a wonderful and interesting launch and reading event, so at Novel Idea that night, and of course the Novel Idea, and also to Alec for emceeing the event. Tell you what, it is 14 degrees. crowding 15 minutes after 5 o'clock. Let's go ahead and do this real quick, and I'll be right back.
Friday evenings at 6 p.m. here on CFRC, listen to Saltwater Music, a show covering all musical genres from the East Coast of Canada. Celtic, of course, but also rock, jazz, blues, folk, and a lot more. I'm your host, Rob Carnell. Tune in to Saltwater Music Friday evening from 6 to 8 here on CFRC 101.9 FM. Or you can catch us on the web at www.cfrc.ca. And for our listeners out east, that's 7 p.m. Atlantic and 7:30 Newfoundland.
Guess what? Pets off-leash can be a danger to other animals and wildlife.
Pets off-leash could scare wildlife, destroy the nests of birds, causing cuts and broken bones.
You can help by making sure your pet is on a leash while you're out and about.
Learn more at sandypineswildlife.org.
This message was brought to you by the students of Linklater Public School Grade 4 class and Sandy Pines Wildlife Center.
Visit The Screening Room, Kingston's only independent movie theater located downtown at 120 Princess Street. They specialize in playing art house, international classic, and cult cinema, along with Hollywood's best new releases. People also always say they have the best popcorn in town. Visit Screening Room at screeningroom.com for upcoming show dates and ticket information.
And you are and have been listening to Finding a Voice here on CFRC 101.9 FM. We are located in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce. I'm here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock, and we do stream live online as well at www.cfrc.ca. And just a quick reminder as well that every week, both hours of this show are uploaded to my personal blog space for it at Finding a Voice on cfrcfm.wordpress.com, and they will remain there for 4 years. So welcome now into the second segment, I guess is the best word to use, of today's show. In the remainder of the second hour, from a June 19th book launch event, you'll hear from Novel Idea Bookstore, another one that featured Jade Wallace and Mark LaLiberté read from, then together they're known as MADE, M-A-D-E, read from and launched their latest book, Zoo, which is spelled Z-Z-O-O. And reading with them that evening, two local poets and other things as well, writers as well, each reading from their own work that evening. You're going to hear Wanda Pramsma and Jason Heru. Tell you what, let's go ahead and just jump right in. Here you go.
Good evening and welcome. My name is Nicola. I'm one of the owners of Novel Idea. We have tonight a series of selections from various poets. Two local, Wanda and Jason, and then Jade and Mark will be reading from their new collection, Zoo. But Jade, you've got the bio, so I'll let you carry on.
Yeah. Okay, thanks so much. Well, to start, of course, thank you, Novel Idea, for having us and entertaining us this evening. We do have a few readers I will be introducing. I don't think we need much more introduction than that. Bathrooms, if you didn't know, are at the back. Books are for sale at the counter. And without further ado, we will welcome Jason Heru, who was the Poet Laureate for the City of Kingston from 2019 to 2022. He is the author of 4 books of poetry, Memoirs of an Alias, Emergency Hallelujah, Natural Capital, and Hard Work Cheering Up Sad Machines, as well as a more recent one as well that is on the counter. His forthcoming books include a short fiction... not forthcoming. This was our old bio for you. His most recent short fiction collection is Survivors of the Hive from Radiant Press, and he has 2 recent poetry chapbooks as well, New and Selected Days from Origami Poems Project and Something or Other from Above Ground Press. Welcome, Jason.
Thank you, Jade. Thank you, everyone, for being here today. I'm so happy to be reading with these great writers and such a great audience. I was just handed these publications from Michael Castile's his press, Puddle of Sky Press. It's a little. It's part of his 1 cent poetry publications. So you can get 100 of them for a dollar. But they'll be free today. If you buy a book today, you'll get one of these free. They'll be at the front cash. This one's called Hotel Dew, which is a landmark here in Kingston. It's just a block away. So after you read the poem, you can go visit. So I won't read it out loud. You can let that be a little bit of a surprise when you get to it. Okay, so what I will read today is a chapbook that was published, I think, like right at the end of last year. It's called A Further Introduction to Bingo. And it was written by myself and a Norwegian poet, Dag T. Stromsvog, prose poet in Norway, Trondheim, Norway. It's a collaborative poem, so it's really kind of cool that we're doing this because we're celebrating a collaborative book launch today as well from Jade and Mark. So how we wrote this was just writing paragraphs back and forth and just seeing what we came up with, very intuitive and kind of organic that way. We weren't sure what we were coming up with. Even now, when I reread it, I'm not exactly sure what it's about. So I'll probably just read a few pieces, and then you guys can kind of, if you guys can let me know what you think of it. But here's the first piece. There's a bunch of repeating characters in it. The mathematician visited City Hall. He asked how many numbers lived in town. The clerk checked the computer. 190,464 people live in Trondheim, Norway, the clerk said. I know the number of people who live here, the mathematician said. I want to know the number of numbers that live here. The clerk checked the computer again. I'm not sure, he said. You don't keep track of your numbers in this city? The mathematician asked. The clerk checked the computer once more and shook his head. It says here, the first number arrived around 4000 BC, but no one knows what happened after that. When the bingo hall parking lot felt sad, he cheered himself up remembering all the treasures he collected over the years. 33 cigarette butts, a recent puddle containing 81 raindrops, $9.47 of loose change, 4 oil stains, a pet rat, 93 pet ants, 5 ketchup-stained french fries, 1.5 potato chips, 11 pieces of chewed gum, a half-eaten apple, plus the moonlight on clear nights, plus the lingering scent of pine from a nearby Norway spruce. So the bingo hall is a bit of a character in this collection as well. The telephone rang at 2 in the morning. I stared at the phone half asleep, wondering what to do. It needed help, but I wasn't sure how to assist. The phone rang again, and I realized the only way I can help the phone was to answer it. I picked it up, said hello. Sorry to bother you, the bingo hall said, but could you do me a favor? I'm afraid of spiders, and there's one in the hallway. I feel it crawling through me. Can you come over and get rid of it? I'll shine a light so you can spot it. I hung up the phone, slipped on my boots and jacket, and stepped outside. I walked across my yard and reached the bingo hall. The automatic doors opened as I approached. A single light glowed in the hallway, shining against the wall. I studied the illuminated wall and saw a spider crawling across it. I carefully picked up the spider and placed it gently inside my pocket. The last time I saw the number 85 was at my grandmother's 85th birthday. I saw the number on balloons and a birthday banner, and even printed on the cake. She died a few weeks later. I haven't seen the number 85 since. One of the many things the mail woman loved about her job was that she never knew day to day what she'd find in her mail bag. Sometimes it was a sack of fish addressed to the sea. Other times she carried tiny envelopes of raindrops sent from a cloud to a puddle. Yesterday her bag was empty, nothing in it, but the mail woman still went door to door delivering the emptiness, the nothingness. Today she delivered a handful of snipped hair to a barbershop floor. Thank you, it's my mother's hair. I miss her so much, the barber said, sweeping the strands into a pile. Mm-hmm. And maybe I'll just pause right there.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Jason. I love that you chose to read some collaborative work. That was really exciting to experience. Our next reader is Wanda Pramsma, a poet and writer living in Kingston, Ontario. Her works include A Thin Line Between, Book Hug 2014, and Aversions, Nothing Special, chapbook from Above Ground Press 2022. Another chapbook, Wide Lens, is forthcoming in 2025 with Lakes End Press. Wanda's poems, nonfiction, and reviews have appeared in journals and magazines, journals and newspapers, in Canada and the U.S. She is the founder and organizer of Driftline, a series of events featuring poetry and music in Kingston. Welcome, Wanda. Hi, everyone. It's really nice to be here, and so nice to meet you both, Jade and Mark. Welcome. And always good to meet with you, Jason. Mm-hmm. It's always a pleasure. So I'm going to read from some new work. This is actually from the new chapbook that's coming. I suppose if I was going to loosely describe this new work, it's largely about transformation of self through mothering, through birthing, and through mothering, and the breakage of self that can happen, and it's an exploration also of breakage of language and sort of what's on the other end of that. So that's all I'll say about it. I'm just go straight in. Plates shift, tectonic, forced to who? Scapula out push, a great blues S neck, scoliosis down the back, upper self so flexible. I know how to move, remove action items delivered down through the opulent core. I hear the call toward a vast internal caretaking. Wave goodbye to the waspy signal cloud. Abolition of I, each commitment, reverb next together, so many words and also so few. Rain subsumed July, this heat, one too many, mojitos, pierced skin, finally the sun ducks behind the limestone. It has no shape, my poem, not the sun, although I cannot see it. The sun, this earth, we have destroyed, a liquid reshaping, shriveling down to coals. Scrape, chip away at the cathedral, locked masterpiece, peaked and peaked, one on top, next to, and beneath the structure. No thing exists in arranged form except tubes. I am tubular. The carved lineages, sternwheeler docking, seagulls screech and feed on the offerings. Where are my kids when you need them? Break up that flock of dump ducks. One fell mooring. I am without boundary, a monkey traipsing along sun-soaked boulevards. All this selling of self, it offends, and yet I am twofold. What if I want both the practical and the absurd? How clear do you want to be? This voice follows like those fluttering demons in Pullman, pokes, jabs, stings as I sit, unable to block out the world. How others do it, I do not know. I always wanted to be the writer who danced with the dancers. Among the lavender, sparrow, silky, lamb's wool, how the chitter-chatter grates as I stare down fields of poppies, cosmos, bee-balm, pygmy sunflowers, I will rest. One child, another child, piled my bloated belly. Cicada heat, rummaging through a decade of experiments, quick to turn. South window dust particles float through blue atoms. How are we whole when no thing is merged? Out in the world and tidily within, own self quivering, no glimpses, goodbyes, too many masks and too few. Bodies heated into the afternoon, scanning the lake, the windmills, deconstructing the page to build it up.
to build it back up. It's no, it's infinity. It's no thingness. Widen the lens, sharpen the gaze, cure letters to the curvature of creation. Disrupt, interrupt, circumvent the subscription to convention. What holding, what releasing, what staying still. I do like sentences, those fettered beings, shaped and behaving. I think I should take English classes, write essays, become analytical, stake out rooms, build walls, pillars, walkways through stone-cloaked campus. What is campus, my son asks. This is it, we are traveling through. Truths learned, unlearned, winding back, forward, undoing. The mountains I draw, not really mountains, I tell my daughter. Only if you want them to be. Throw up the leaves trough, make unpattern the pattern, allow the art to fall before the course. Thank you.
I guess I'll introduce us while Mark's getting a drink of water. I am Jade Wallace. That is Mark the Liberty, who will be back in a moment. Together we write under the name Made, Mark and Jade. Fairly easy to remember, minus the pesky vertical line. We've been writing together since 2018. Zoo, which is a bit of an unusual book, as you will see there. There's only one book, but there are five different cover variants, so do not be confused by the multitude of options. This is but one of them. It's actually our first collection together. The first collection we finished together. We have done more since then. But this one's here now. And I'm sorry, I'm sort of like floundering here, Mark. Is there anything else we want to say about Made? Or do you want to...
Not really. Okay. But I will start by saying that we have a little thing that's going to go around. It's not like church because actually you and Kay, you don't have to put in.
We'd prefer you don't put in.
There are these little kind of glow-in-the-dark 1980s vintage animal button rings. They're for small fingers, but, you know, they're beautiful little objects too. And if you want to take one or two, you can even put it next to your bookshelf or whatever.
And they sort of clip, so you could try to clip them around something also if you want.
Some people, the fingers fit. And take one, or take many, or take none, but I'm going to pass that around in our beautiful little flamingo bowl. You can see that animals are kind of a theme with the book.
So you might have guessed from the title.
Yeah, zoo. It's pronounced zoo.
Despite the two Zs.
Despite the two Zs. Because we're doing a collaboration, we just wanted both of us to have a Z and both of us to have an O, so we changed the word slightly.
And, I mean, that's the, like, glib reason for it, but I feel like there's a deeper significance to it as well, which is, like, we are engaging with this idea of animals as subject, but, like, we're really going to kind of, like, unpack that idea a bit, and rather than being, like, a very traditional zoo spelled correctly, we don't want animals to just be a kind of, like, spectacle to look at. We really want to, like, sort of get at, like, the interior lives of animals and the overlaps between human and non-human animals and how humans, you know, are just very overdeveloped animals in a way.
Yeah. We are probably going to break our set a little bit today. We were talking about that a little in car, so I think we'll just...
There's such a spirit of minimalism in this
reading.
Have
to follow the lead a bit.
Yeah.
So we'll start with a joke. There is a joke embedded in here, just hidden on a page. My girlfriend works at the zoo. I think she's a keeper. It's a fairly serious book, but we did want to put the thing here. And
yes.
This is our author's portrait. Two horses. There's a lot of doubled animals in the imagery that open each section of the book. The book is divided into four sections. It begins in water, moves to land, moves to sky, and then a section we call elsewhere. And then there is a fifth section in the book that is called taxidermia, and a fairly extensive note section, non-academic, but sort of explaining some of the leads and fun little things that tweak our interest and might have inspired some of the poems. So we'll take you through a little tour of the zoo, starting with an example from the first section called Air.
Water.
Yes. I jumped right to the side.
Mark's getting ahead of himself.
This one is called They Eat Them Weeping. It's about alligators and crocodiles and has a few characters in the poem. Wally, Albert, and Snip Snip. Two of them are fairly famous cartoon alligators and crocodiles from Pogo and from Hanna-Barbera cartoon. But that's actually just the name of real alligators and crocodiles in the piece. So.
Well, they're interestingly, as we found out when we were doing research, because we went down a lot of rabbit holes, there are a couple of famous, semi-famous, as famous as alligators and crocodiles can be, real-life examples of a Wally and an Albert. So Wally was actually a little bit notorious for being an emotional support alligator to an older gentleman in the U.S. And then Albert was a very large alligator. I believe he's also an alligator.
Like a house alligator. Someone had dedicated a room.
Illegally. Yeah. And there's some really amazing photos of him like lounging by an indoor pool and things like that.
None of that has anything to do with the poem. But it gives you a sense of what we're doing when
we're
thinking about a poem and working through a poem and sort of like trying to engage with little interesting things in the world. Yeah. This piece is called They Eat Them Weeping. Crocodiles are known for their insincere tears.
But alligators are better conduits for both sorrow and joy.
Their closed mouth, lemon-lime grins, leak teeth everywhere.
A terror barely contained.
Sealed jaws drop, bending paths into slow rivers.
Snip, snip, tickles skins.
Hisses at hallucinogens.
Hunts downwind from the accidental moments that provide the splash-sweet tuck of life.
A dainty morsel awaits, so fish or cut bait.
It's time to take arms by the orange groves, then rehydrate in the heat.
Crocodilians are not unlike dogs, sun-sprawled in mud or dust.
Mouths spread gleefully to catch whatever resembles a comestible.
Someone is coming through the gate.
Wally and Albert surface at night when stars peep and moon creeps.
Soaring hunger is a thirst, baited with the fruit of human cruelty.
Huff. Civilization is a very thin veneer.
A drop in the swamp to regret later.
It's funny, we have all these like elaborately numbered tabs that we did the other day, and then we're like, let's just
I think we'll do
improvise.
The one example from water, and we'll move on to land.
Okay.
So, why don't we do Menager?
Oh, okay.
Menager.
Surprise.
Just a little note about how these are written. Depending on the project, we take different approaches. In this instance, it was a bit of a volleying back and forth and a kind of discussions and
mutual editing.
And then we kind of close off the poem, and then if we decide to read them, we kind of revisit the poem and just decide on a way to read it. So it's not, we're not really
not
kind of reading
our
lines.
Parts or anything.
Just
yeah.
Reading in
performing.
A way.
Yeah.
Menagerie. Pillow, chrysalis, claw. You wake locked inside a Walkerville two-story.
Time has made you wild, a captive inside your taxonomic home.
The scenery outside is flutteringly alive, stirring behind tableau curtains.
The skies are severe clear, and there are bars clouding your head, a manifestation of today's migraine or else a protection annexed onto a messy world.
Sugar glass comfort for a gilded cage. Catch yourself spitting into the fishbowl, putting key to lock it.
Screens go masking to distract the eye, meshed up tight to keep the time flies buzzing.
Maybe it would be better to be a weed in a wild field, but you are more like a blue rose flocked by delicate avian darlings, nibbling on the crusts of fickle patronage.
A chain link fence defines the yard, plucked raw and tilled turf green.
This is a boundary that the furred or feathered don't see. One your neighbors will help watch in the middle of the hooded night.
Culture is a strange beast, a petri dish of cells on display.
A zoo is a garden where animals grow to make space for the city. Okay. We'll move on to air. We just have to figure out what we're going to choose. Do you want to do subsidized housing?
Oh, yes. I forgot I mentioned that literally earlier today. So I'll do a little intro note,
yeah,
if you don't mind.
I'll show you in the meantime. Mm-hmm. So this is a multi-page poem with these kind of birdhouse paragraphs on mm-hmm. sticks, and it kind of squeezes through about 5 or 6 pages. A short piece, but a sequence.
Yeah. We got started writing this because Mark had this birding book he picked up from a secondhand store, and we found out about birding hotlines that bird watchers use where they sort of call in to report bird sightings, and we're fascinated with that, so you'll see that a bit in here. The reason we wanted to read it today, though, is because last year when we were in Kingston, we were told we had to go see near Picton the bird boxes.
And we were doing a reading there the next day.
Yeah.
And we did.
So we went and saw the bird boxes, and we're like, oh, that's like a thing there, the bird boxes. And
the
we're like,
field
these are kind of like
felt
boxes.
Like the poem, which had already been yeah. written, but we thought...
Felt like it all tied
we
together.
We thought we could bring it back to Kingston.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Subsidized housing for small birds. Start right now. Build regardless of the season. Every little nest needs a bird. Work to make it look like it all grew there naturally.
Delight the sapsuckers, and they will reward with frequent visits. Should this fail, don't feel too badly. Few flyers survive their first year, and there are other kinds of success.
Whether songbird or kestrel, we recognize their timbre, their particular chitter and whine. Shrill keys fall on sharp ears.
One oriole ate wheat, swore off the opulence of fruit nectar and insects, a protest against the coming of the suburbs.
We had to give up on goldfinches. The birding hotline was overrun, its tape exhausted by reports of commonplace marvels.
If there are starlings, look closely at the night sky. Anything worth seeing is worth photographing, exposed by the light of the moon.
See the reflections of trees and sky in the glass. Windows of detuned opportunities. Flickers go out with the light.
A lost iPhone vibrates against a hummingbird song. Tweets resurface, echoing through the forest until someone is there to hear them.
A scratched throat revolts. Here we go again, arguing about sound poetry with screech owls. This contact call has gone cold, won't be answered.
It's summer. Look out the kitchen window. Morning doves with bent wings will require treatment or tears. We must be aware of the land we are dealing with.
Skeptics are breaking open eggshells to see what's inside. Robins discard the gaunt, abandon the angular, and wait for the rest.
When gray skies delimit blue jays, our last careless hold on warmth is lost. Lovers will come home bearing roadkill.
The frames of our houses come from the torsos of their trees. We replant twin sycamores, single poplars, forming their roosting boxes in the image of our own. We hold out our hands brimming with sunflowers and sorghum, say, it's for the birds.
I realize that was also appropriate because they're like little prose poems.
Yeah.
Yeah. It all ties together. Are we doing one from elsewhere, Mark?
Yeah.
Did you want to do Sphinx, maybe?
Why don't we do something else?
Oh. Such as?
Well, okay, so we have a difficult poem here, but I think maybe it'll work. So we have one poem in the book that is actually split into 4 poems, and it is based on the migration and life cycle of the monarch butterfly. And when we had the poem, we realized that, and trying to place them in sections, that the monarch actually hits all of those stages, land, air, and even elsewhere, which I think is in the...
It flies over water.
In the cocoon. And elsewhere, that section is like a lot of microscopic things and sort of spiritual images and things like sphinx, imaginary animals. So we're going to read like a quarter of the poem, the poem that starts the elsewhere section, which is a part of the Monarch Suite. It's the second part of the Monarch Suite, and they don't appear in order, but they appear in the order of the monarch's life and migration. But this would be in the cocoon, and it's, you can say the name of the cocoon.
How are we reading it?
I don't know. We'll just
like
read
the stanza?
Yeah.
Okay. We have, as we mentioned, we kind of plan how we're going to read things normally. So we have this like scoring system where we each underline our respective parts. But Mark is really freestyling it today.
Yeah.
So this is Metempsychosis.
2. Still earthbound, spin a silk mat to cling to. After the final split, our striped skin hardens into a chrysalid shell to shelter us.
We must pull an eidolon from the universe, turn loose the storm cocooned within us.
Air comes through 100 fine filament tubes piercing the matrix of this umbilical cord. The catalytic force breezes in.
One part death, lick of an afterlife, soul extract making its presence felt in these shifting cells. Each adaptation is a correction.
We are compounding eyes, reordering organs, fleshing out fresh muscles, building the homunculus of another life.
Our body is pushed through many versions of itself. What melts away reforms, resolves into malarian mimicry, a shared language of poison mapped along black borders in radiant orange and delicate yellow.
Our rise consumes the soul's glassy waste, tickles it out of existence. When the time is right, we emerge transformed.
Thrash our wet and crumpled wings until we are free.
If you want the rest of the poem.
The other three parts.
And should we leave it at that, or did you want to do anything else? We'll do one other thing.
Well, yeah. Why don't we do our usual? No. I'm getting turned down.
We'll do the start and end thing, which we never do, which aren't quite poems, but are sort of poems. So the first page in the book is The Horse Eats No Cucumber Salad.
And the last, Our Rabble of Rabbits Go Nibbling on Ribbons.
Thank you.
We're the last ones. I guess that's the end of the reading. Thank you all for coming. It was a short but joyous evening. Please check out books. I think one copy of Wanda's book is still here for whoever is entrepreneurial. Jason has got some things here, and you being the audience have books around the store also. Thank you for coming, everyone.
Two other quick things. We're sort of like probably a lot of people, a little turned off by social media and what it accomplishes for us, and we decided to go back to an old mailing list system. So there is a form up there if you would like to join our mailing list. Just give us your email. If you also want to give us your mailing address, we're going to do a kind of like Christmas card poem something little thing that we'll mail out, and we would be happy to mail you one and say hello. And I'm not sure if we really explained that there are 5 variant covers. You did? Okay, great. And that's it. Thank you.
Where are the other 3 parts of the metempsychosis?
They start each section.
Yeah, each section has a section.
They're numbered.
Yeah. They're called Minikin.
Milkweed. I can figure out the numbers.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you.
And you just heard from a June 19th a launch event. You heard at Novel Idea Bookstore, Jade Wallace and Mark LaLiberté. I don't know why I always mess up his name, read from and launched their latest book called Zoo. And again, that's spelled with two Z's. Reading with them that evening, you also heard work by Wanda Pramsma and Jason Haru. And right now, as we slowly begin to kind of slide out of here, I just want to give my heartfelt thanks to all of you for having tuned in to this second segment, also in the distance. And well, let's do this first, and also to Jade and Mark and Wanda and Jason for their wonderful readings and wonderful event that you heard in the second segment of this show. Also, again, to Novel Idea for both hours, being host to two book launch events. And, of course, to all of you out there for having tuned in to both hours of the show today, or at least one or the other. I will say in advance, before I give a quick share, just a couple of upcoming events that kind of the usual ending words, that just saying that you are and have been listening to Finding a Voice here on CFRC 101.9 FM. We are located in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce. I'm here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6. Also, a quick reminder that I upload both hours of this show each week to my personal blog space for it at Finding a Voice on cfrcfm.wordpress.com. Will remain there for at least 3 years. And please, too, after the show ends, stay tuned right at 6 o'clock for 2 hours of East Coast music in a show called Saltwater Music, hosted by Rob Carnell. And just a quick shout out here, share a couple of quickly approaching events. Tomorrow, actually, Tim Cook will launch his new book called The Good Allies. It's a historical nonfiction book, and it will be held at Murney Tower at 2 p.m. I believe you may know where that is, but Murney Tower is located at 2 King Street West in Kingston. I believe it's right where Berry Street dead ends into King Street West. That's coming up again tomorrow, July 12th, at 2 p.m. But Novel Idea isn't happening there, but they will be on site with books. And then coming up Monday evening, it's Quirks of Human Nature. It's a poetry series performed with improvised music. It's a monthly series. The change is they have a new day of that they meet each month, and also a new location. This will be held at the Time Out Bar and Bistro, which is at 167 Ontario Street here in Kingston. It will run, it's coming up Tuesday, July 15th from 7:30 to 9:30 p.m., and it will feature Ying Lee as the featured poet, Deb Sherman's on piano, and also co-MC, and Will Van Ryn is on guitar. There will be bonus poets as well, and as well as Deb Meg Freer, who also co-hosts the event. And let's see what. Oh, I should mention the Time Out Bar and Bistro. If you don't know where it is, it's 167 Ontario Street, which is right where, right at the intersection of Johnson Street and Ontario Street, right in the heart of downtown. And then let's see if I. Hey, I think I have time for this too. There's a new agency, a new. That a new program that's setting, that's called Word Labs. They have writing classes, workshops, and more. That is beginning, actually. This has just started and still developing. And for details, I would suggest that you do go to, let me give you that first in case I run out of time here. It's www.wordlabs.ca. They do also have a Facebook page. What it... the first thing coming up is actually coming up this Wednesday. It's Word Lab's peer writing group. It's going to be held biweekly for all skill levels, ages 13 and up. And so it's going to be held this Wednesday, July 16th, 6 to 8 p.m. It's a writing group that will be meeting or will meet every 2 weeks. In between, they're also going to offer individual workshops, and one of those will be coming up a week from that. So July 23rd from 6 to 8:30 p.m., it's Writing Through an Improv Lens with Wilding. And then you'll find a number of others listed there. So I'm going to have to let go with that. Oh, it's located at the Kingston Literacy and Skills, which is at 16 Bath Road, Kingston, which is very near the intersection of Princess Street and Bath Road, heading on towards on down Bath Road. Anyway, I'm running out of time. I hope you have a great week, and I'll catch you here next week. Thanks for tuning in.
I get a group shot of food.
Friday evenings at 6 p.m. here on CFRC, listen to Saltwater Music, a show covering all musical genres from the East Coast of Canada. Celtic, of course, but also rock, jazz, blues, folk, and a lot more. I'm your host, Rob Carnell. Tune in to Saltwater Music Friday evening from 6 to 8 here on CFRC 101.9 FM. Or you can catch us on the web at www.cfrc.ca. And for our listeners out east, that's 7 p.m. Atlantic and 7:30 Newfoundland.
Have you been dumped? Left all alone? Just want to find your soulmate? Look no further, because your new best friend is waiting for you at the Kingston Humane Society. The Kingston Humane Society is a nonprofit animal organization founded in 1884 that is supported solely by the community, receiving no government funding to assist in their mission of caring for injured, abused, and homeless animals, with the goal of creating families and homes for the animals. They are the only open shelter in the region, accepting every animal brought to them with compassion, respect, and humane assistance. If you want to donate to help these animals find their best friends, or if you're interested in finding the new love of your life, please visit KingstonHumaneSociety.ca. Everyone just needs a little love.
Tom Savage. We love our Spotify. We love our Apple Music. It's a wonderful thing to have all the music in the world at your fingertips. But the big downside is that these streaming services pay fractions of a penny per streamed artist, and that doesn't buy a lot of groceries. So if you're really digging an album, reach out to that musician or band, make a donation, buy some physical merchandise, help them keep creating great music for you. We can't rely on giant corporations to do the right thing. We as music fans need to put our own value on music. Let's keep that creative engine going.
Guys, gals, non-binary pals, different circles is moving. same day, different time slot. We're now on Fridays at 9 p.m. Join me from 9 to 10 p.m. for an adventure through sound. Who knows? You might just find your next favorite song.
Tune in Sundays at 11 p.m. for Orchestral Maneuvers After Dark with me, DJ Squared. Each episode features a great mix of new and vintage, Canadian and international, new wave, punk, post-punk, garage rock, pop, electronica, ambient, and even the occasional remix. Sweet beats are in store for all to enjoy. Join in the fun, OMD, every Sunday at 11 right here on CFRC 101.9 FM.